Thanks for listening to this podcast of Trending with Timmeri from the Relevant Radio app. Anything you share in terms of episodes, whether it's texting it to a friend, posting on social media, helps to build up the kingdom for God, to help confront the challenging issues we face as a culture, but with joy, with hope, and with an eternal perspective where our faith collides with everyday life, bringing eternal principles to help us live our life joyfully.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timmeri on Relevant Radio.
Recent research coming out of UCLA reports that Gen Z, those currently the age as of this year of 27 to age 12, are wanting to see more friendship on the big screens, less sex, and we know data shows that we're working toward 50% of teenagers today are not sexually active. However, over 50% are looking at pornography. But isn't it profound that they want to see depictions of friendship on the big screen? How can we help navigate them through the challenges of friendship? See examples of friendship, what to look for, what to do with your friendships. More on that in a little bit. Also, we are seeing an example of outright eugenics coming out of the Nebraska state legislature where babies with disabilities are being targeted for the death sentence. Also, in just a moment, Lillian Fallon, she comes from the New York fashion scene and also is a Catholic writer on fashion. I'll share with you a little bit more about her book in a bit, along with answering a question in just a few minutes here about what to do if your child, teenager, is harming herself. Ideas for navigating that incredibly difficult and common trend happening right now among teenagers. You're listening to Trending with Timmeri here on Relevant Radio. Joining me now is Lillian Fallon. She is a Catholic author of a great book on the theology of style. And she also comes from the New York fashion scene. And she's here to give us tips for how to buy clothes at the thrift store on the budget. What to look for, what not to look for, and just how to go about it. Maybe you've been a thrifter. Maybe you never have before, or maybe it's something you're really interested in getting into. I know my mom was always awesome at finding thrift store finds. In fact, I still have things in my closet from high school that she picked out that the fabric was such great quality, and who knew you'd find it at a thrift store, and they're often my most complimented pieces. So joining me now is Lillian Fallon. Welcome back, Lillian.
It's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
I know you're a big fan of shopping at the thrift stores, and with everything from the economy toward and seasons of life where maybe we just can't buy a brand new wardrobe, I'd love to get your how-tos on how to navigate thrift store shopping for a wardrobe.
Oh my gosh, yes. I've been dying to go to the thrift store, especially lately, because I think that with the season changing, we're all like, all right, I'm ready to get new clothes, start fresh. So I'm already gearing up, so this is perfect conversation. My first tip is preparing for it. So I always talk about going to the thrift store kind of ready to go work out almost, because it is a workout. It's a workout mentally and physically, because you're going through tons of garments. Your arm, I've had times where my arm is sore the next day from going through so many hangers that are heavy. But I recommend dressing first, very like comfortably, and also in things that you can put garments on top of, and also garments that you aren't afraid to get a little dirty or a little musty. Because I think one of the things that holds people back from going to thrift stores is that, you know, it's used clothing and we don't always know, you know, where those clothes came from. So I always say, hey, put on, you know, a ratty old shirt and some pants and get ready to get a little dirty. And then when you get home, just throw it all in the wash. But so that's my first tip. And then I also, for preparing, I recommend hitting up Pinterest and kind of getting a sense of the fashion history that you're hoping to find at the thrift store. And thrifting is really a process where you can't have the expectation of finding that one garment that, you know, you have your heart set on and that you're hoping materializes in person. it's really an approach where the garments kind of find you. And it's fun that way because then your personality and your personal style can really come out in the things that you wear.
So you've got us some tips of, in particular, dressing comfortably in just a, kind of getting an idea of what you're wanting to wear. What else would you recommend as we head to the thrift store?
Yeah. So when it comes to thrifting, I say first go for basics, like those staple wardrobe items. You're going to be more likely to find those classic pieces, like a white button down or a blue blazer or a little black dress, kind of those items that are the basics of your wardrobe. Thrift stores have, you know, been accumulating the same things for so many years now. And it's easy to find pieces that are from like 80s, 90s that are actually higher quality than basic items that you'd find today. So I've found trench coats. I've found leather blazers. I've found brown boots. I found things that are actually pretty neutral when it comes to a wardrobe. So if you go to the thrift store with the intention of finding a really amazing piece that stands out and it's a personal style piece and maybe it's this, you know, crazy one of a kind item, chances are you're not going to find that like dream thing that you have your heart set on. But if you go there and you look for those classic pieces, you'll be able to store up on the foundation of your wardrobe. And then as you shop, those unique items, you'll just come across them. And then it'll be kind of this serendipitous moment where you look at a floral blazer or something and you're like, wow, I'm so surprised to find that here. That really reflects my style. And then you pick it up and it becomes a piece of your personal style.
I was talking to someone at the airport just last week. So I was traveling and I commented on her shoes. I said, I love your shoes. And she looked at me and she said, go to the affluent areas for the thrift stores and consignment stores. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on, one, is it worth it going to the affluent areas? And two, I'm just curious about your thoughts on consignment stores versus thrift stores.
Yeah. Okay. So I do recommend going to thrift stores that come from areas that maybe are a little bit wealthier because you're more likely to find items that, you know, say a grandma is getting rid of her old blazer collection or her old pumps, her high heel pumps collection that she doesn't want anymore. I've found full on collections that you can tell came from the same person because it has the same style and it's the same fit, the same size. So yes. And I have gone to areas that maybe aren't as affluent and been a little disappointed, but you know, it is a search. Thrifting's really a treasure hunt. So when you go to any thrift store, you really don't know what you're going to find. And that the point is that you're open. You're open to whatever might come your way. And that's what makes it so exciting because you don't anticipate what you're going to find. And when it comes to thrifting versus consigning can be pretty pricey. I honestly don't really go to any consignment stores. They typically take items that are kind of like mid-range, like 2000s, and then they just price them up a lot. And yeah, they're not usually technically vintage. And if they are vintage items, they're going to be so expensive. And I've found vintage pieces from the 70s at the thrift store that were like $10 or less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting going to consignment stores because consignment stores are usually a bigger markup and they're usually buying people's clothes and often cipher through them to decide which ones they want to resell. And I've had some success. I think I bought a pair of really nice Ralph Lauren jeans for my one-year-old a couple years ago.
Nice.
There, that was like a hit. It was worth it. It was pretty comparable to a pair of jeans for a baby you'd buy at the store. But other than that, I remember going through and thinking, wow, these are like higher name, perhaps clothes, but often very worn and way overpriced. So I'm with you. I prefer thrift stores for sure. And there seems to be a big push toward consignment stores. And I tend to find that most people don't realize the difference. So maybe they go to a consignment store, and although it might be a little tidier and more clean and things have already been sifted through for you, you're paying a major markup on those clothes.
Yeah, totally. And I flat out don't recommend going to stores like Buffalo Exchange or Plato's Closet. I find it to be really frustrating when you are going to go to a secondhand store and you end up getting like a lot of Shein or Forever 21 or Zara. For me, I love going to the thrift store because they have out the Ralph Laurens and the 80s Liz Claibornes. So yeah, I really recommend hitting up when you go to the thrift store. My method is that I first look at the shoes. You'd be surprised at how many amazing shoes I've gotten from the thrift store. I'm actually looking at my collection of shoes right now, and they're pretty much all from the thrift store.
Interesting. And what's fascinating is I've found a lot of the different shoe designers, their quality has gone down. I mean, what example is Stevie Madden? Their quality of shoe used to be much better than it is now. You have Bowerman as well, that used to be a much higher quality, that's gone down. And so often when you're looking at those thrift stores, you're finding better quality shoes that might be a little worn or sometimes not at all. I can't think of how often, Lillian, I've been given multiple bags of clothes. People say, here, I'll go through this before I take it to the thrift store. And sometimes a quarter or more of it still has the tags on it.
Wow.
That's amazing. Just saying what often goes to their thrift store can still be brand new or be a fabric that holds up a higher quality. If you're just joining me, that's Lillian Fallon. She comes from New York fashion scene. She's written a great book, if you want to check it out, on style. It's a theology of style, available online. We're posting a link on social media as well as the episode notes. Another question is, what fabrics would you recommend to keep an eye out for, if any, when you're thrifting?
Oh, yeah. Definitely cottons. Like 100% cotton. Linens are always really great to keep an eye out on. Wool blazers, wool coats, wool skirts. Of course, silk. You have to kind of be prepared when you go to the thrift store to make that hard decision of, am I going to buy this and take it to the dry cleaner? Or will I buy it and will it just sit in the bag for forever? So yeah, you have to kind of make that decision of, okay, am I going to take a bunch of things to the dry cleaner or not? But those high quality product or the high quality fabrics, they're ultimately going to last so much longer than the polyester blends that we find at fast fashion stores. And that's why I pass up a lot of the time on Zara items, even when I find them at the thrift store and I'm like, oh, this is actually pretty cute. When I know where it's from, I'm like, eh, this is probably just not going to last a very long time. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I try sticking to garments that have been made from like the early 2000s, 90s, 80s, and 70s. And those are pieces that have really lasted in my wardrobe.
And I found that in general recently, whether you mentioned places even Zara, Forever 21, that have been big hits over the years, perhaps a lower price point, and even sometimes what you get at TJ Maxx and some of the other beloved spots like that, it lasts a season. You wear it once or twice. And so I've been moving more and more toward watching what the label says in terms of the fabric, because I want clothes that aren't just going to last that one season. And if you're just joining us, or maybe you've been with us, you're like, I'm a man, I'm not interested in going thrift store. I know my producers are getting a little bit of a kick out of our girl talk over here. It's not. And I'll just give an example. A couple weeks ago, we were at a party and it ended up being chillier in the evening. We're outside and my husband didn't have a jacket. And his friend said, hey, I have this great sports coat. It'll go with your outfit. Goes and grabs a sports coat, brings it out. And it was this really, really nice jacket. And I finally say, okay, where did you get that? I need to find it. And he says, actually, my mom bought it for me at the thrift store. She was thrifting. And it was just this exquisite fabric, kind of unique colors, very masculine. And I thought, okay, this is a good reminder that I need to go thrifting, not just for myself, But I know sometimes men don't have the patience necessarily to find that gem in a million while going to thrift store. So do you have any tips for men as well who might be intimidated by thrifting?
Yes, make it fun. You know, I think that when you get inspired by something and kind of make it a hobby, it's not a chore anymore or a task. It's something that's exciting. And I always tell people who are interested in developing their style to look at Pinterest and to figure out what decades inspire them. So before going to the thrift store, for men and women, search in the search engine 70s fashion, 80s fashion. And as you're looking at it, what are the items that are jumping out to you? What are the pieces that you would hope to find at the thrift store? And what is a look that you could see yourself wearing? So the more you get comfortable with envisioning yourself in the styles that you're looking at online as you're searching through Pinterest and collecting those outfits that you'd want to try, the more you'll be comfortable with going to the thrift store and picking those pieces and then putting them on yourself. And then it'll become something that there's like, what is that? Like a reward for your hard work. I think a lot of women love thrifting because we put in that work, and then the reward that we feel for finding that gem is it makes that item so much more special.
I'd love to hear a little bit more on your comments with regard to style, because I find this is something especially women, and in particular young women, are struggling with, how to navigate and find what your style is. And your style changes over the years. I was just reading a story, I covered it here on Trending yesterday, Kylie Jenner's being critiqued right now for having a more, quote, conservative style, and people are questioning if it's because of her new boyfriend. She ended up responding to critics saying, no, I think it's because, you know, I'm a mom of a second child now and my clothing has changed. And sometimes it's hard to figure out what that new style is. So you mentioned Pinterest and looking up 70s fashion, 80s fashion, what inspires you. Some people will say European fashion inspires them. What would be some search terms that you would throw out there to start seeing different types of fashion online that can be inspiring for all of us, but also for teenagers as well, if they're trying to figure out what they're interested in wearing?
Definitely. And I think that going back to my point of looking at different decades, because those trends, they cycle in and out constantly. But if you're finding pieces that resonate with you, that's going to stay the same. You're not going to have like, oh, I don't want to wear those clothes anymore at all, if you're following fashion history and what really inspires you from fashion history. So what I would recommend is searching, like, what are like basic items that you like, find those basic items, and then let the other more personal style-y pieces that express who you are, let those be the things that you add on top of your basic items that you wear on a regular basis that can fluctuate with your body size, where you are at in life, whether you have kids, whether you don't have kids, whether you're working in an office or not. And then you can cycle in those accent pieces that are more expressive over the years. And then those can kind of swap out depending on what you're inspired by. But yeah, searching for terms like basic fashion, relaxed fashion, classic fashion, expressive, romantic fashion. Try and accumulate images that inspire you and pick out the things that really feel like your personal style that you're hoping to find at the thrift store. And you might just find it there.
Love these ideas for navigating both going to the thrift store and also figuring out what your style is. And you mentioned something a couple weeks ago when you were here, and I loved it. You commented that someone struggling with modesty, especially a teenager, get to know what your style is and start to navigate more so your interest in clothes around that. So it's been Lillian Fallon here on Trending. We're also linking to the last episode. She joined us to dive into various closet essentials that you should pick up and have in your wardrobe to keep it fresh. You can find her book, Theology of Style, online. We're posting a link to it on social media. I'll be right back here on Trending to answer a question about what to do if you have a teenager, especially a teenage girl, who is harming herself and you're trying to figure out next steps moving forward.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
the rate of teenagers, children engaging in self-harm only increases. I was written earlier this week by a father who's trying to navigate his own daughter. Peter emailed me and said, I thought you might be able to guide me to locate programs that can help my 13-year-old daughter who attempted to harm herself. An adolescent doctor recommended to enroll my daughter in a 4-week rehab facility. It would preclude her missing 4 weeks of school. I'd like to hear your advice on it. Oh, I'm with you, Peter, and I'm praying for you and your daughter, and I hope if you're with us now, you'll add Peter and his 13-year-old daughter to your prayer intentions. As we're looking at the increase in frequency of self-harm, I think the data is pretty clear in helping us to see what's happening. A decrease in friendship among teenagers, decrease in physical activity, impact of diet, increase of screen use. There's a lot going on, and there's a lot having to do with the dopamine. That is that pleasure reward system in the brain. I was looking at research earlier this morning, and Susan Bauman's a licensed counselor who works immensely with children who are engaging in self-harm. She said, when kids cut themselves, it releases endorphins and they get a high from it. It becomes a control issue, and this is the way I release the pressure. So in other words, what she's getting at is that kids, one of the many reasons kids are engaging in self-harm is it releases chemicals that we'd otherwise receive when engaging in basic activities such as eating, exercise, and sexual intimacy. And it's interesting because as we see a rise in things such as pornography, we see a rise in the struggle surrounding food. I mean, how often do we hear, I look at data all the time, kids struggling with weight. They comment that they're eating because it makes them feel good. And I know this might sound contrary and a little crazy, but the data's there. When kids engage in self-harm, yes, they are physically harming themselves, but it gives them a certain type of high that is helping them to release pressure and navigate emotions, although in a unique way that is very dangerous, but in a way that is allowing them to feel something. You hear a lot from the younger generations, especially millennials down, they want to feel something. Wendy Lader, a PhD clinical director at Safe Alternatives and the co-author of the book Bodily Harm, says that for kids experiencing intense emotions, it can be used to deaden the intensity, that is cutting. For those feeling a sense of numbness, cutting serves the opposite effect. It's helping them to feel something. So what she's saying is that cutting can be used to decrease the intensity that a teenager is feeling when it comes to their emotions. So teenagers, and I wouldn't just put teenagers in this bracket. I think anyone using social media today belongs in this bracket. We jump from one emotion to the other, never feeling our way through something. And not that we're meant to be strictly an emotive culture, but God's given us the gift of emotions. Sorrow, anger, giddiness, excitement, happiness. These are fleeting emotions that come and go. The challenge is that today, all of us, but especially teenagers, don't know how to ride that emotion without it consuming them. Now, that emotion, whether, let's say it's sadness, kids might experience such severe sadness, loneliness, and isolation. They want to deaden the intensity of that feeling. And so cutting would be a means to deaden the emotion of that sadness, isolation, loneliness. And we could use other examples. On a different side of the spectrum, the numbness that is prevalent today in many teenagers, cutting serves in the opposite effect in that it makes them feel something, even if just the pain or even the remorse and guilt for what they've done. Again, different hormones and chemicals are triggering in the brain, including things such as endorphins and dopamine, getting this pleasure high, getting this happiness chemical. It's giving kids this sense of control over their environment that they're wanting to change, especially when it comes to those buzzwords we often hear, their mental health. Now, I think at the end of the day, we should know that cutting is a cry for help, and it's a sign that something needs to be done. Now, this Peter wrote in asking my opinion, and I've worked a lot recently over the years with teenagers, and I've worked in the pregnancy resource centers. Cutting suicidality is nothing new to my purview of what I've seen. And I've seen secular approaches to it, and I've seen non-secular religious approaches to navigating things such as self-harm. And I really would lump in this transgender movement goes hand in hand often with this cutting and anorexic culture. It's almost the new version of looking for attention. And so I think it's important we see these things, anorexia, cutting, suicidality, identifying as transgender, sudden transgender onset out of nowhere. It's a cry for help. Something is off for this teenager. Now, I am not a physician. This is my personal take on what I've seen happening with young girls today, from both observation and exposure to some of these issues. I think that we need both sound scientific approach, but also God. And I think that this is the problem, is we have to be careful not to reduce this exclusively to a scientific, psychological response to a child's need. Kids need God, kids need their parents, and parents need resources to navigate this. And so I think the approach needs to be practical and spiritual. So right now what I'm seeing is that the trend is when kids are in a severely dangerous place when it comes to cutting and suicidality, the trend is behavior modification by going to some sort of a program where kids are often completely checked into it. Now, it might be for the day, but more often we're seeing them in long-term programs where they move into these places for programs. I personally, again, I'm not a medical physician, I'm not a fan of this. Why? Because one, they're secular, they remove the child from important fundamental exposure to God they need, but two, kids need their parents and their to see their parents helping them navigate this. But what can we learn from these programs where kids are being checked into for things such as self-harm, even drugs, etc.? Well, what we see is there's a major trend to going tech-free in these programs. Why? Because kids' dopamine levels are off the charts with this dysregulation when it comes to their brain and their important brain chemicals that have to do with their happiness. So kids, bottom line, need dopamine resets. Now, that can be done with closing and shutting down technology. Going cold turkey, it's a transition, it's a detox, it's challenging. Talk to the many parents, and there are many today who are navigating tech shutdown, tech detoxes. A great resource if you're trying to navigate this is called screenstrong.com. We'll post a link to it in my resources. I don't think I grabbed that yet, so we'll get it, screenstrong.com. Now, with that tech, shutting down the tech helps to reset the dopamine levels. Another great way that research points to with regard to resetting the dopamine levels for your kids has to do with fasting. Now, I'm not out here saying, hey, make your kid do these extensive intermittent fasting. But what I am saying is that you can work on shortening the window in which a teenager is eating. So shortening the window to maybe 8 or 10 hours to allow a longer period of time for the body to reset and assist in resetting dopamine levels. That's really key because that's what it's at the heart of the tech shutdown as well, in addition to getting tangible face-to-face engagements and relationships. It's interesting because I think that there's this desire to check kids into programs today when often the cry for help and what kids are saying when it comes to self-harm, it's both exterior influence of difficulty with relationships around them of their peer group, but it also is due to the impact of the relationships at home with parents. And so I think additional concentrated one-on-one time with parents is key. Homeschooling's great. I'm seeing people who are making life-altering changes in their kids who are struggling with cutting, suicidality, depression, anxiety, and even a trans identity for a time. So I know these are hard areas to jump into, but again, I think it's a multifaceted approach. You need God, kids need parents, and parents need resources to navigate this. Sound scientific and strong sociology indicating where we need to go. Exercise is key in this whole step I'll mention in a moment. Also, I don't think we can ignore the importance of vitamin deficiency, vitamin D and iron. A lot of people are testing extremely low, and we know low D and iron levels can lead to depression, anxiety, for people to act very much so out of sorts. I have had, praise God, it's in remission. It's been reversed, but I had polycystic ovarian syndrome, And I wasn't diagnosed with that till years later. But I think that did impact me significantly in high school with the ups and downs of emotion that were already hard to navigate. Now, to journaling for teen girls, a lot of the researchers and psychologists are pointing to the importance of teenagers being able to journal, to wave the emotions, or ride the wave of their emotions, to chronicle their life, to write and tell stories. It helps them to be creative. It helps give them an outlet to converse. It can be very prayerful as well for teenagers. And also, although listed last, it's very important to remember therapy is excellent. But when you work with a therapist, I don't believe in just a secular approach to therapy. We need good, strong Catholic therapists. You can find one at CatholicTherapist.com or through the Catholic Psychological Association. I'm posting a link to both. And you can find someone who specializes in self-harm and cutting for a teenager. I would argue that it's important to know as a parent perhaps what your child needs more so, if they need a male therapist versus a female therapist, if that might possibly help with a wound that is continuing to trigger the harm and damage being done. So maybe because there are issues with a father, having a strong, good relationship with a male therapist would be helpful, or vice versa. Now, I was recently speaking to someone, and I heard a stat that I've not been able to verify yet myself, but I was intrigued by it. And it was a comment with regard to rehabilitation programs. And the stat was that 92% of rehabilitation programs fail. They have a failure rate of 92%. And I think this is an indication of the fact that we can't put a Band-Aid on a problem of the soul crying out and needing more, whether it's friendship, parents, God. And we have to be cautious of that. And this is part of the reason why I love Dr. Nicholas Carderis and his work. He's been a frequent guest here on Trending, and I'm going to make sure we link to his episodes as well on social media, because he speaks often to the impact of technology and just overall teen happiness today. He's a leading and international psychologist on childhood and teen mental health. He has an excellent couple of books, including Glow Kids and a recent book called Digital Madness, How Social Media is Driving Our Mental Health Crisis and How to Restore Our Sanity. Now, I was looking at a recent article for Forbes where he was interviewed, and he commented on how to help kids be happy and thrive and find bliss. And there are five key things that he commented on that I think are aids for navigating as parents when a child is going through with cutting, self-harm, and has suicidal ideations. Number one, and I'm listing these five, get outside in nature as much as possible without devices. Number two, he says, explore faith. Start these discussions with your kids with things such as, what do you think happens to a person when they die? It allows for a much greater conversation. Third, encourage hands-on creativity. Music, painting, writing, drawing, sketching, find ways, pottery, find ways for your teenager to be hands-on and creative. I would even add journaling in there. I think that's a great place to start. Number four, he says, start an open-ended discussion about what teenagers value. You'll learn a lot about them, being careful to not show judgment, but to get a better idea of what they're exposed to, what they're interested in, and ask open-ended questions and intentional questions to navigate this. Dr. Carderis recommends using the Socratic method, where you just continue to ask questions, even when they're asking questions of you. Well, what do you think about God? Maybe they ask you a question and you say, well, what do you think about that? You start to get a better idea of what they're thinking. Now, Dr. Nicholas Carderis says, ask questions about current events. Get to know what they think and challenge them respectfully on their thoughts and ideas, because he says the goal is for them to start engaging in critical thinking, to get their mind functioning and acting and having those critical thinking skills that are so necessary for kids. So I think there's a lot to work with when it comes to the challenges today of teenagers, from depression, anxiety, suicidal ideation, cutting, the trans identity. I think there are a lot of tools for parents, and kids need God, their parents, and the resources you guys are engaging in. Some books I'll throw out there specifically for teenagers include For Girls, Emotional Virtue by Sarah Swafford, and Theology of His Body and Theology of Her Body by Jason Everett. I also mentioned Dr. Nicholas Cardero's book for adults, Digital Madness. I'm posting a link to all these resources in the episode notes for today's show, along with on social media. You can find me online at Timmerie, that's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E, but this podcast will be available later on. I know, you know, like I do, parents who are in the trenches of trying to navigate the challenges kids are going through today. Depression, anxiety, trans movement. I hope you will share this as a resource with another parent who needs it and needs it desperately. I hope you'll join me in praying for Peter and his 13-year-old daughter and turn to Our Lady, Peter. I keep coming back to that. Turn to Our Lady and St. Joseph. They know the woes of navigating the difficulties of prayer, of parenthood. Go to confession. Make sure your kid's going to confession. And I always think about the words of Jesus Christ when he came down from the Mount Tabor after the Transfiguration, and his disciples were trying to cast out a demoniac, a demon, and they couldn't get the demon out of the demoniac. And so they finally appeal to Christ, and the Father comes and he's appealing to them. And he says, Jesus, I believe, help my unbelief, help my son. And the child, the teenager is foaming at the mouth. He's known for throwing himself in the fire, and he's in this really bad place. And Jesus casts out the demon. And later the disciples ask him, Jesus, why couldn't we cast out this demon? And he commented, one, on their lack of faith, but he also, in one of the Gospels, says some demons are only cast out with prayer and fasting. So if your kid is navigating something very difficult, remember that the devil's playground today truly are our youth. And we need to pray and fast for our youth. I know fasting is a practice often forgotten in our Catholic tradition today, but it's one that Jesus himself told us to use as a spiritual weapon and safeguard for ourselves, but also for the intercession of others. And so we'll be praying for you. And I know you've got an army of prayer warriors behind you now who are with you navigating this in similar situation, or who have the utmost compassion. We'll be praying for you, Peter, and your daughter. You're listening to Trending with Timmerie here on Relevant Radio. Our toll-free line is 888-914-9149. It's sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters Life Insurance. More on youth today, age 12 to 27 this year. The Generation Z is searching for fulfillment. Where are they searching? What can we do about it? I'll be right back to discuss that and the latest news out of the Nebraska legislature as they try to target babies with disabilities for the death sentence.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timmerie on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Tomorrow, that's Wednesday, I'll be joined by a mother who has fought public and private school systems from transitioning her child to a trans identity behind her back. Now she's helping push forward laws and state ballot measures to protect teens from harmful trans ideology, to keep girls' sports for girls only, and upholding parents' rights. So if you want to learn more about what you can do in your state to protect teens, be sure to join me. She'll share about what's happening across the nation, but especially various ballot measures, including one in California as well. So join me Wednesday, 6 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio. And if you have questions for her, be sure to send them in to me ahead of time. You can email me. Just head over to trending@relevantradio.com. You can email me trending@relevantradio.com. Okay, we have a lot of ground to cover, and we'll see if we make it through everything. I really want to make sure we dive into this. I was looking at recent data on Generation Z. Now, my generation, Gen Y, also known as the beloved millennials, I say that with a grain of salt and humor. Justifiably, my generation gets a bad rap, but Generation Z is one that we're learning a lot about as they have come into age. They've come to age. They're in the workforce today. Currently, Generation Z are those born between 1997 and 2012, which would mean they're currently, this year, either turning the age of 12 or all the way up to 27. They're in the workforce, they're in the middle school to high school years, they're in college. And a recent report by UCLA called Teens and Screens 2023 gives three key findings. One, they say sex isn't necessary on screen for stories, and they want to see no sex on the big screens. They say romance is overused in storytelling on the big screen, and they say that they want to see depictions of friendship in the television shows and movies they watch. Now, this is a pendulum swing when you look at teenagers. We've seen for years that in the 1990s in particular, by the time a kid graduated from high school, he or she had already lost their virginity before graduation. Now we see data continuing to trend that, including from the Institute for Family Studies, reporting that less than 40% of teenagers and high school graduates today have ever had sex. However, we've seen a major increase in pornography use. Common Sense Media reports at least half of teens using pornography intentionally, with another 14% using pornography unintentionally. In other words, stumbling across it and finding themselves using it. Now, this is from teen polling. And I'm just going to say, can you imagine the number of teens who don't say that they're looking at pornography? I imagine the numbers are very high, which, not to be a pessimist, but the number of teens using pornography is much higher than 65%. Now, what they did share is that these teenagers were exposed to pornography before the age of 10. So just key things to be aware of, cracking down on devices, being aware of how teens are coming across this. All of this is relevant because what we're seeing is that although teenagers, Gen Z, those aged 12 to 27, so we're talking about our young adult, part of our working population, college, high school, middle school age, they want to see less sex on the big screen, even though they're looking at more pornography, and they have a deep desire for friendship. A very deep desire for friendship and to see depictions of it. It actually made my heart a little sad to see this, that they've been so overly sexualized. They're saying, hey, just show me how to be a friend. They're telling their story with this data. They're saying, I don't know how to be a friend. I want to see that it's possible, effective, how to have a friendship and a platonic friendship. And I add that because I think it's a necessary part of this conversation. I was just speaking to a woman this week, and I was in Wisconsin, and her story was similar to many, that her child, who is now identifying as bisexual, 17-year-old girl, her story is similar to many others. They don't know how to have intimate friendships that aren't sexualized. They long so deeply for intimate friendships. In the world, the culture, social media, modern television tells them that intimacy is sexual, that intimacy is just between a man and a woman or between people of the same sex, and you go further than was ever intended for something outside of male-female marriage. And so they're asking, this is a cry from Gen Z, show me how to be a friend. They've perhaps not seen it in their own relationships with parents or their parents' relationships. With a high divorce rate and also a number of teens and young adults now whose parents never even lived together, one of whom was sometimes never present. And so they're asking for help on how to cultivate friendships. And I think there's much to be said of solutions. Solutions include what the top psychologists and therapists are saying today. Earlier, I took a question about navigating when a child, in this case, Peter's daughter, 13-year-old girl, is cutting yourself. What do you do? And the leading topic today surrounding teenagers and mental health, if they're willing to actually share the real data, centers around technology and screens. There's a reason why the people who are creating the iPhone, who are designing the online learning programs, the games, the social media apps, Silicon Valley does not allow their children to have screens. They do not allow their children the very technology and programs that they are developing. Why? Because they know it's addictive. They know it's harmful. They're going to tech-only schools. They know the damage on mental health and education and relationships that screens and technology has. That's a dirty little secret of Silicon Valley. So what are the solutions? Well, getting off the tech. This is why I love our friends at ScreenStrong.com. ScreenStrong.com helps you to navigate and delay technology in your home and to help cultivate good, healthy, mature children, teenagers, and adolescents. It helps them in navigating and developing intimate friendships as well. Kids need to moderate screens and have in-person engagement. But I think the question is, how is this done? It's next to impossible to engage in an intimate friendship when there's a screen between them. Now, I grew up in the early 2000s. Screens came on the scene as I was in those adolescent years, middle school, high school. I saw the transition. I remember even when we were so excited for our stupid flip phones and later our iPhones, and my next door neighbor would be over or my best friend would be over, and we would be texting each other from the same room, sitting on opposite sides of the room. But it was so cool because you had this technology and you could communicate nearly instantly. And also, you had this great barrier of you could say things and sometimes things that you didn't feel comfortable saying out loud via text message. Come on, you know what I'm talking about. It's not just kids and teenagers who do it. It's adults as well. Things that people would say online via text message that they would never say in person. I'll say it again. It's next to impossible to have intimate and rich friendships with a screen between you. Whether it's a screen that's keeping you miles apart in your own homes, or it's a screen that you're using in the same room as the other person, enjoying all of your other relationships, friendships, while ignoring the person that's in front of you. Girls need to be able to have deep and intimate conversations with other girls. And this is a key part of females. Females' mouths start to move earlier and sooner in the womb than boys do. You monitor research surrounding play of toddlers and adolescents. The girls say far more words than boys ever do. Girls and boys need to have shared experiences of playing house, playing outdoors, doing their nails, engaging in a basketball game. Again, different activities for different children, boys versus girls, and some of which are joint together as well. Riding a scooter, learning how to ride a bike, sitting on an ice block and riding down a hill. I remember doing that, down a grassy hill. As you get into the teen, college, and young adult years, volunteering for me forged the friendships I have today. The pursuit of truth, faith, and justice, and coming alongside someone who believes in similar things is transformative. So why, for me, getting involved in pro-life work was key. Maybe pro-life work isn't that area for you. Maybe it's feeding the poor. Maybe it's fighting the trans ideology. Maybe it's that you need formation in your faith. Another great program I was involved in college and after college was Eagle Eye Ministries. Excellent faith formation, taking you outdoors, and a great opportunity to meet like-minded people who also want to talk about God. I think finding common interests as well in friendship, we need navigation, helping to remember that, whether it's music, hiking, the arts, or cooking. I remember my childhood best friend, we did a lot of time cooking together, hiking, going on walks, we rode our bikes. Are kids engaging in that and without screens? And do they have downtime, both together and alone, to cultivate interests? To cultivate those deep relationships, taking out a good old board game or card game, finding projects to work on around the house. People love Pinterest. Well, why don't we take those Pinterest ideas and start working on them? In fact, tomorrow here on Trending, I'll dive into three types of friendship as we see Generation Z wants to learn more about friendship. Let's show them models and talk about the importance of friendship and how to make that happen. I'll be back tomorrow on Trending. Up next is a family rosary. This is Timory from Trending with Timory. Wednesday, I'll be joined by a mother who has fought public and private school systems from transitioning her child to a trans identity behind her back. Now, she's helping push forward laws and state ballot measures to protect teens from harmful trans ideology, keeping girls' sports for girls only, and upholding parents' rights. What can you do in your state to protect teens? Join me daily, 6 p.m. Central, on Relevant Radio or the Relevant Radio app.